32. 10. That was the number of coffees Carmen Farouk Lane ordered while waiting in the Somerville Cafe. She didn't want to cheaply hold down this table when another paying customer could have it, but she also didn't want to float away on a lake of coffee. She glanced at the time on her phone. 35 minutes had passed since the agreed-upon rendezvous time. When did she give up? "Just one more, please," she told the server. God, but she was nervous. She didn't know if she was more nervous about the meeting or being found out by the moderators. She'd resigned right after checking out of the quaint little rental cottage, just like that. Strip the sheets from the bed, make sure all the dishes were in the dishwasher, turn off all the lights, hide Hennessy's moonlit sword in a linen closet, quit the only job that seemed important. Locke had accepted the keys to the bullet-ridden rental car and had her sign a non-disclosure agreement.
"Of course I'm disappointed," Locke had rumbled, "but I respect your decision."
Farouk Lane wasn't entirely sure she believed him. The moderators had not been interested in respecting people's decisions before that point. He was less gracious about Liliana's resignation a few minutes after, but Liliana had been insistent, gentle, fair. She cited the mishandling of the Rhiannon Martin job and the emotional scarring of her teen self. She noted that the moderators had not to that point seemed to be able to use her visions to make the world a safer place. She reminded them Farouk Lane's presence had always been part and parcel of her deal with the moderators. No, she could not be persuaded to stay long enough to help find another visionary. Yes, she was sorry to leave them blind, but she wished them luck. Farouk Lane hadn't really thought the moderators would let them go, but they had. She dipped into her parents' bank accounts to buy a car at the closest local dealership, stopped briefly by the rental cottage to retrieve Hennessy's sword, and then left that part of her life in the rearview mirror. Boston was their destination. Liliana had just had a vision. 9 a.m. that morning, Declan Lynch had called to discuss an urgent matter.
"I would prefer to have this conversation on the most secure line possible," he murmured. "It requires the utmost discretion."
Coincidentally, she had told him, she was in the Boston area. Did he want to meet up in person? She had been intensely grateful that she'd been the one to call him about Ronan Lynch earlier that month. Now, he was late.
"Miss Farouk Lane?" Declan Lynch stood by the table. He looked like his brother Ronan, but with the edges sanded off, the memorable bits deleted. He had neat, civilized dress slacks, a neat, civilized wool sweater, neat, civilized facial hair, very nice shoes. There wasn't a stitch that was out of place in this upscale cafe full of talkative Tufts students and drowsy medical residents.
"I didn't see you come in," she said. "I came in the back." She saw him check his surroundings, but only because she was watching him closely. He was very good, long practice with paranoia.
"I'm sorry I'm late. I had to be sure I wasn't followed."
She couldn't really believe it. Here he was. Liliana's vision had promised it, but the visions were always things for the moderators to interpret, not her, and they were always for killing Zeds, not attempting anything more nuanced. "Of course. Can I get you a coffee?"
"We should be brief," Declan said by way of reply.
His voice was vague, nasal. He sounded as if he were announcing a meeting agenda.
Unwise to push our luck.
8 minutes was how long it took Declan Lynch to say his piece. "I love my brother," Declan said. "So know that when I say this next part, I'm saying it from a place of fondness. Ronan's a follower. He's always needed a hero to follow. When he was a kid, he idolized my father. When he was in school, he idolized his best friend. Now he's obviously idolizing this bride. He doesn't get ideas on his own." "That sounds bad. Remember I said I loved him. I mean it in the best way. I mean it this way. He's not your problem. Take away bride,
and Rona's just the same as he always was. A kid who's going to go back to Virginia to play with cars and mud and cow shit. Who was running the show when you saw them together? It was Bride, wasn't it? Not my brother. Not Jordan Hennessy. Whose name has been whispered subversively for weeks? Bride's. She tilted her chin. We're in agreement. Bride's the target.
Are we in agreement? Because I want to be sure you know why I'm sitting at this table.
A co-worker at Alpine Financial had told Farouk Lane once that, neurologically, most people saw their future selves as a totally different person, and so treated them with less empathy, like a stranger. High achievers, though, saw their present and future self as one person, and accordingly made wiser decisions. Farouk Lane had immediately decided that her job as a financial advisor was to close the gap between these two selves. She closed the gap for Declan Lynch. You're here to make sure your family gets a chance to have meaningful adult lives, Farouk Lane said with quiet surety. You're here to make sure there's actually a world for them to have those lives in. You're here because what you saw in Bride scared you, and you want your brother far away from him. Because that's not what your brother stands for, and you don't want his life to be defined by a single decision. You're here talking to me because you're aware you don't have the ability to do this on your own. You're here because you're a good brother. Declan's mouth worked. He was slick enough to know she was also being slick, but he didn't disagree with her. My brother isn't to be harmed, he said. I want to see you say it. The promise wouldn't have meant anything if she were with the moderators, but she wasn't with the moderators. You have my word, Farouk Lane said. 7-3 Park Drive, Boston, Massachusetts. That was all that was written on the card Declan slid across the table as he stood up. That's where they're meeting Matthew. Bride mentioned last night he doesn't have another of the dreams he uses to confuse people and he can't get any more until they're out of the city. Is it true you killed your own brother? She was taken completely by surprise. You're not the only one who has access to information, he said in that bland way. My brother was a serial killer, she said. He was also a Zed. I didn't pull the trigger, but yes, I helped find him. Your brother's not a serial killer. He's just a Zed. Declan narrowed his eyes. For just the barest second, he did not look at all like he belonged in this nice, civilized cafe. Don't forget your promise, he said, and don't call my brother that. 6. That was the number of scenarios Farouk Lane ran through as she looked at the Park Drive address on various satellite maps. It belonged to a rose garden in the Emerald Necklace, a series of green parks chained through the Boston area. It was a bad location for an attack, right in the middle of the city, right up against the swampy fens that gave Fenway its name, surrounded by the trees that gave Bride his information. But Liliana said Farouk Lane only needed enough time to draw Jordan Hennessy's sword. I'm trusting you, Farouk Lane told Liliana. One sword draw, 1 second, 1 death. When it came to it, she could kill someone, she thought, to save the world. She had stood by and helped the moderators kill many others after all. She couldn't erase that. Just try to make it matter. 1 person, 1 Zed, 1 sword. She could do it. It wasn't 23 people. It was 1. It will turn out all right, Liliana said gently. What happened in the vision? Farouk Lane said. What did I do? Where was it? It will turn out all right, Liliana repeated. 5 minutes after Farouk Lane got to the James B. Kelleher Rose Garden, the moderators found her.
Did you think we weren't having you followed, Carmen? Locke rumbled with disappointment. It was hard to tell if he was disappointed in her working without them or not covering her tracks. He held a takeout coffee from the cafe she'd met Declan at,
and Farouk Lane couldn't stop staring at it. She'd been careful. She was sure she'd been careful.
You're a lot easier to track than a Zed in an invisible car. You know why? You obey the law.
I have a plan here, Farouk Lane said. We want the same thing.
Locke cast a heavy glance at Hennessy's sword. It was hooded safely away in its shoulder scabbard, but its identity was clear. The hilt shouting, "From Chaos."
And it's a plan you think you could execute better cowboy style. I respect what you did here, Carmen, but we can't risk you taking point on this. We'll take it from here. The team's all here. Thanks for the good work.
I made a promise that I'd only take down Bride, Farouk Lane said desperately. I intend to keep that promise.
You'd risk the world on that.
Farouk Lane repeated, I intend to keep that promise. Let me do this, please.
How about this? Locke offered. How about you let us help you keep that promise? Like you said, we want the same thing, and you need our eyes anyway.
It wasn't as if she had a choice. There was no time. She was outnumbered. We want the same thing. But it was only past Farouk Lane who truly believed this now. Present Farouk Lane wasn't sure, and future Farouk Lane unclear. Okay, Farouk Lane said. She explained the plan. It was a hasty thing, constructed with very few data points. Declan's address and time. Liliana's description of her vision. Farouk Lane's understanding of what Hennessy's sword could do if wielded without hesitation. The plan was skeletal in its simplicity. At the center of the rose garden was a small fountain, a little over a foot deep. It was as far from large trees as one could hope for in the city. There was no evidence that Bride could receive information from roses. Carmen Farouk Lane was going to climb into the fountain, lie down in the nearly frozen water, and breathe sips of air through a straw that reached to the surface. She would wait there in the inhuman temperature until the moderators texted her that the Zeds had arrived in the garden, and then she would leap from the water with Hennessy's sword like an avenging angel, killing Bride with a single moonlit stroke. Her phone was only rated for an hour of underwater use, but the cold would kill her before that anyway. Is this how you saw it? She asked Liliana again. It will be all right, Carmen. It will be all right. It did not feel all right as she lay in the bottom of the fountain. She tried to keep her hand from shaking as she held the breathing tube steady in her frigid lips. She focused on a black feather that floated on the surface of the water above her. She was waiting to kill. Waiting to kill. Waiting to kill. She had to think of him as not human, as not living, as simply a tree to hew down. The trees were on his side, though, which meant the trees had feelings, too. Nothing was simple anymore. She was that feather. She was that feather. Her phone buzzed against her. The Zeds were here. 4 seconds passed before she could animate her cold body. She plunged from the water, sword already alive with light and swinging. The blade missed Bride by several inches. Ronan Lynch's raven screamed into the air. Bride's eyes met hers. This was wrong. This was already wrong. It had to be immediate, or it wouldn't work. She couldn't fight them. Anything beyond the single stroke got messy, and anything messy meant she couldn't guarantee her promise. Ronan had his sunfire sword out in a second, but Bride snatched it from him. Get out of here, snapped Bride. You know what to do. Farouk Lane didn't have time to see if Ronan obeyed because Bride fell upon her with vexed to nightmare. They fought. They fought. The rose garden was alight with the weapon's eerie glow. Farouk Lane's hands were so frozen that she could barely feel the hilt, but it seemed to her the sword wanted her to succeed. Even as her fingers were too numb to guide it, the blade chose an effective path for itself. However, Bride's blade wanted him to succeed too, and so a battle waged. It did not matter that neither Farouk Lane nor Bride were swordsmen. The swords were made to fight, and they would fight, and Farouk Lane and Bride would wield them. Rose bushes shredded, stone planters cleaved, trellises sprung in all directions like split rib cages. But neither the sunfire blade nor the starlit blade took any damage. She had been right when she guessed the only match for From Chaos was this other sword. She was tangentially aware that outside the vivid light of the blades, moderators and Zeds fought. Gunfire sounded. The sword's furious dripped light both warmed Farouk Lane's chilled body and repelled bullets, slicing them as easily as they sliced anything else. Bullets! She was breaking her promise. Declan Lynch had come to her and asked for her help and gotten her word. She'd really believed it when she promised him Ronan would be untouched. The moderators had been killing Zeds, and now they were going to kill her integrity, too. This felt more intolerable than anything else to this point. She'd promised. "I only want you," Farouk Lane shouted to Bride as the swords met again. "If you really want the others to get away, you'll give up. We know it's you. I know it's you." Bride said, "You don't know anything you think you know, Carmen Farouk Lane." "Don't play your mind games with me," she shouted. "I don't play games," Bride said. "I just turn down the volume on the shit that doesn't matter." Suddenly she was hit from behind. The blow hit the middle of her spine so sharply that her knees buckled. There was no arguing with it. She was down on her knees, and then she was down on her face. Gravel bit her lips. She felt the winning sword tumbling from her hand. She felt her vision flicker. She felt everything going wrong. Gunfire speckled like the sound of castanets behind a dancer. She heard someone shout. She had trusted Liliana. It was supposed to be all right. 3. Zeds bolted from the Rose Garden. They were on foot. They had to be. One of them had smashed their dripped hoverboard across Farouk Lane's back. This was why her spine stung, why she still felt pain shooting up to her neck and her fingertips. This was why Hennessy's sword burned the dry grass a few inches away from her as she gingerly sat up. This was how Bride had gotten away. She could hear shouts, more gunfire, sirens, all moving farther and farther from her. This was wrong. All wrong. The moderators were driving the Zeds to ground and breaking her promise all in one. Declan Lynch had trusted her. She had trusted Liliana. She trusted herself. The deepest wound was one she didn't even understand. Bride's voice said in her head, "You don't know what you think you know." Just words. Just words from a Zed. Then why did she want to cry? Liliana leaned to help her up. "It will be all right," she said. 2 of them stood in the Rose Garden. Farouk Lane leaned over and replaced Hennessy's sword in the scabbard. The grass beneath it was a burned ruin. The entire garden was a ruin. These old roses torn up. The gravel path shredded deeply. The fountain tinted an ugly shade with just a bit of someone's blood. Everything was worse off than when they'd gotten there. The moderators had vanished, chasing after the Zeds. But Farouk Lane knew it didn't matter. Bride would get away. The second her first swing had missed him, he was always going to get away. She'd known that. "I trusted you," she said to Liliana. Liliana gestured
for Farouk Lane to look behind her. One figure returned quietly to the rose garden. There was a proud line to the shoulders, to the lifted chin, a coiled power to the walk, which was more like a stalk. The eyes were intense and bright, but the shape of the mouth was at odds with the rest of it. Something about the expression there was miserable, vulnerable. Jordan Hennessy. "You have my sword," she said, stopping among the ruined thorns of the old roses. Warily, Farouk Lane stepped in front of Liliana. She put her hand on the hilt warningly. Her heart was beating fast again. Who knew what deadly dreams this Zed might be carrying? "I don't want to fight. We're not here for you."
"I know. I'm here for you."
Hennessy made a big performance of turning her pockets inside out and showing the interior of her leather jacket. Then she held her hands out on either side of her like a reveal.
"I'm giving up. This is what it looks like when I give up."
"How do I know this isn't a trap?" Farouk Lane asked.
"Life's a trap," Hennessy said in a sort of bleak, funny way.
Liliana stepped out from behind Farouk Lane, her face gentle and unsurprised, and Farouk Lane realized that Liliana had known this was how it was going to happen. She'd seen this in her vision. This moment. Not Farouk Lane slicing through Bride. She'd let Farouk Lane climb into that freezing water knowing that she would fail to stop Bride when she sprang out. She'd known it was a ridiculous plan, and had let it play through for this moment. Not killing Bride, but acquiring this Zed. One more Zed than any other plan had ever managed. Would it have all worked the same way if Farouk Lane had been in on it from the beginning? Trust was a hard thing. "It's all right," Liliana told Hennessy. She walked straight up to her, as if she wasn't one of the three most dangerous Zeds in the country, and she clasped one of Hennessy's hands with such warmth that the Zed stared at her. "We all finally found each other."